Here's what you need to know before you ever sign your name to an aircraft lease. That signature can follow you long after the engine stops turning. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS, the show where we take the headlines and tell you what they actually mean for the person in the left seat. Today, we are not talking about a new airplane or a splashy record flight. We are talking about paperwork. And I know the word paperwork does not make anyone reach for the volume knob. But stay with me, because this is one of those topics where the headline does not tell the whole story, and where a little knowledge up front can save you from a very bad day down the road. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the AOPA, published a piece this month on what every pilot needs to know about leases and liability, and it hits on something a lot of us gloss over for many of us. Flying isn't just a job or a weekend habit. It's a lifelong passion. But passion and contract law live in two very different hangars, and when they finally meet, usually it's because something went wrong. So let's get into it. Before we do, a word about today's sponsor. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com, now leases. When most pilots hear the word lease, they picture one of two things. Either you're renting an airplane you do not own, or you own an airplane and you're handing it over to a flight school or a club to put it to work while you're not flying it. That second arrangement has a name. It's called a leaseback, and it is one of the most common and one of the most misunderstood deals in general aviation. Here's the pitch, and it's a good one. You buy an airplane, say a Cessna 172, a Piper Archer, something a flight school can put on the line. You do not fly it 40 hours a week. Nobody does, so instead of letting it sit and depreciate in a tie-down, you lease it back to the school. They rent it to their students and renters. They handle the scheduling, and you collect a check based on the hours flown. In theory, the airplane pays for itself. Maybe it even turns a profit, that is the dream on the brochure. Now here's the part the brochure is quieter about. The moment your airplane goes on that flight line, your exposure changes completely. You are no longer just a pilot who owns an airplane. You're a business owner who has put a high-value, high-risk asset into the hands of strangers, student pilots, time-building renters, people you will never meet, flying your airplane in ways you cannot control. And if something happens, the question every lawyer is going to ask is a simple one: who is responsible? That word, liability. That is the whole ballgame.
Let me explain why this matters so much in aviation specifically. In a lot of industries, if a piece of equipment causes harm, the liability tends to land on the operator, the person who was actually using it. But aviation has a long history of what the lawyers call the deep pocket search. When there's an accident, and especially when someone is hurt, the injured party and their attorneys go looking for everyone who touched that airplane. The pilot, the flight school, the mechanic who signed the last annual, the manufacturer. And yes, the owner, you. This affects you if your name is on the title. Ownership is not a passive thing in the eyes of the law. If you own the aircraft and you leased it out for commercial use, a court may well decide you had a duty to make sure it was airworthy, properly maintained, and operated responsibly, even if you were three states away sipping coffee when the accident happened. So the AOPA's core message here is one I want to underline in permanent marker. Do not sign a leaseback agreement, or frankly, any aircraft lease, until you understand exactly where the liability sits, and do not assume. Read it every line. Let's break down what you're actually looking for in that document. First, who carries the insurance and what does it actually cover? This is the single biggest trap. A flight school might tell you, "Don't worry, we've got insurance." And that may be true, but their policy is written to protect them, not you. There's a difference between a policy that names you as an additional insured and a policy that merely exists somewhere in a filing cabinet at the school. If you're not specifically named, and I mean named in writing, you may find that after an accident, the school's insurer has zero obligation to defend you. And defending yourself in an aviation lawsuit is not cheap. Legal fees alone can run into six figures before anyone even talks about a settlement. Here's what you need to know. As the owner, you want to be named as an additional insured on the operator's policy, and you want your own coverage on top of that, belt and suspenders. The two policies do different jobs, and in a serious claim, you will be grateful for both. Second, read the indemnification clause. This is the part of the contract usually buried near the back in the dense paragraphs nobody reads, that says who pays whom when things go sideways. An indemnification clause can shift enormous financial responsibility from one party to another with a single sentence. Some leasebacks are written so that the owner indemnifies the flight school. Read that again. It can mean that if the school gets sued because of something that happened in your airplane, you're the one who ends up paying their legal bills and their damages.
You want that clause working in your favor, or at the very least, you want it to be mutual and fair. If the contract asks you to indemnify them but offers you nothing in return, that is a red flag the size of a windsock in a gale. Third, maintenance responsibility. Who pays for it? Who schedules it? And critically, who is liable if it does not get done? In a lot of leaseback deals, the owner pays for maintenance, but the operator controls the airplane day to day. That is a dangerous gap. If a renter flies your airplane past a required inspection because the school scheduling dropped the ball and something breaks, guess whose airplane it is? Yours. Make sure the contract spells out, in plain language, who is responsible for keeping that aircraft airworthy and what happens if they fail too. Fourth, and this one is easy to overlook, understand how the airplane is being used. There is a real difference in risk and in insurance cost between an airplane used for private rental and one used for flight instruction. Instruction means student pilots. Student pilots means hard landings, and occasionally worse. Your insurance premium reflects that risk, and so does your exposure. If your airplane is going to be a primary trainer, you need to price that in, both in dollars and in risk tolerance, before you sign. Let me pause here and flag something as opinion, because I promised you I always would. In my view, a leaseback can be a genuinely smart move for the right owner. If you go in with clear eyes, the right insurance, a fair contract reviewed by an aviation attorney, and a reputable operator you trust, it can work. I have seen it work, but I have also seen pilots treat it like a passive investment, like a rental property that happens to have wings, and get burned badly. An airplane is not a rental condo. The stakes when something fails are measured in lives, not just dollars. Treat the decision with that weight. Now let's widen the lens, because liability is not only a leaseback problem. Say you're on the other side of this. You are the renter. You walk into a flight school, you rent a Cessna, you go fly. Are you exposed? You bet you are. Here's the thing. A lot of renters do not realize. When you rent an airplane, the school's insurance protects the school. If you bend that airplane, the insurer may pay to fix it, and then this is the key part. They may come after you to recover what they paid. That is called subrogation. The insurance company steps into the shoes of the school and sues the renter to get their money back. Pilots have been hit with bills for tens of thousands of dollars this way, sometimes more for an accident they assumed was covered. The protection here is called renter's insurance, and it is some of the cheapest peace of mind in all of aviation. For a few hundred dollars a year, a renter's non-owned aircraft policy covers your liability, and if you choose the damage to the aircraft you are flying, up to the deductible the owner might charge you. If you rent airplanes and you do not carry renter's insurance, I would gently suggest that is a gap worth closing this week. The AOPA and other providers write these policies routinely. It is not exotic, it is not expensive, and it can be the difference between a rough afternoon and a financial catastrophe. Let's talk about co-ownership and flying clubs too, because that is another place leases and liability quietly intersect. When you buy into a partnership or a club, you're entering into a legal relationship with the other members. If one of your partners has an accident, the injured party may look at all the owners, not just the one who was flying. This is why so many partnerships and clubs are structured as a limited liability company, an LLC or a corporation. That structure can create a legal shield between the aircraft's liability and your personal assets, your house, your savings. It is not bulletproof. Courts can pierce that shield if the entity is a sham or if you were personally negligent. But a properly formed and properly run LLC is one of the most common and most sensible tools for managing shared aircraft liability. Here's what you need to know if you're in a partnership. Have an operating agreement. In writing, spell out who pays for what, how decisions get made, what happens when someone wants out, and how liability and insurance are handled. The friendly handshake deal between two buddies works great right up until the engine needs a top overhaul or somebody puts it in the weeds. Then the handshake is worth exactly nothing. I want to connect this to the broader regulatory picture for a moment, because it is easy to think of the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, as the only rulemaker in your flying life. It is not. The FAA governs airworthiness, certification, and how you operate. But the FAA does not write your lease. The FAA does not decide your liability. That world is governed by state contract law, by insurance law, and by the specific words in the documents you sign. You can be perfectly legal in the eyes of the FAA and still be financially ruined by a contract you did not understand. Two completely separate systems. Both of them matter, and only one of them shows up on your check ride. There's actually an FAA angle worth knowing on leases. Specifically, when you lease an aircraft, there are rules about what is called operational control. In a dry lease, the person leasing the airplane provides their own crew and has operational control. In a wet lease, the aircraft comes with a crew. The distinction matters enormously because it can determine whether an operation is considered private or commercial and whether it requires an air carrier certificate under the regulations. Get that wrong, and you're not just facing a liability problem. You are facing an enforcement problem with the FAA on top of it. Truth and lease agreements that are poorly written have gotten well-meaning owners crosswise with the regulations without them ever intending to break a rule. If your lease involves providing an aircraft to someone else for compensation, that is exactly the moment to bring in an aviation attorney who understands operational control. This is not a place to save a few hundred dollars on legal advice. So let me pull all of this together into what you should actually do. If you are considering a leaseback, get the agreement reviewed by an aviation attorney before you sign. Confirm you are named as an additional insured, carry your own owner's policy on top, and understand exactly where maintenance responsibility and indemnification sit. Do not rely on the operator's reassurances. Rely on the document if you rent by renter's insurance. This week, it is cheap, it is easy, and it closes a gap that has bankrupted otherwise careful pilots. If you fly in a partnership or a club, put your arrangement in writing, consider forming an LLC, and make sure everyone understands how liability flows if the worst happens. And across all of it, remember the theme. The airplane is the fun part. The paperwork is the part that protects the fun part. Give it the same attention you give a pre-flight because in its own quiet way, it is exactly that, an inspection of the risks before you commit. Now, none of what I have said today is legal advice, and I want to be clear about that. I am a pilot, not your attorney. Every situation is different, and the laws vary from state to state. What I'm telling you is where to look and what questions to ask the answers. For your specific situation, come from a qualified aviation attorney and a good insurance broker who knows this industry. Both are worth every penny. My thanks to the AOPA for the reporting that shaped today's segment. They do consistently good work helping pilots understand the business and legal side of flying. And this piece is a solid example of it. You can find more from us anytime at RadioHangar.com. That's the frequency for today. Read the fine print. Protect what you've built, and I'll see you back here on ATIS Tower, signing off.